Welcome to the Sinister Sisters podcast. I'm Lauren.
I'm Felicia.
We're best friends.
And we like spooky stuff.
Yes,
and
we do.
I'm sick.
She's out with it right off the bat.
Yeah. I listened to a podcast recently. So I just started a new job as a teacher. And I listened to this podcast. Yay. And I was like, things that they don't tell you as a first year teacher. And one was like, you're going to get sick immediately due to all the germs of the children. And literally I was with the children for 2 days and immediately got sick. And I was like, oh no.
That feels right.
Fine. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm almost done with it.
And now you're going to have such a good immune system after a couple weeks, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll be unstoppable.
I love it. Well, I was just telling Felicia before this that my recommendation this week is Barbarian.
Ugh,
so I won't say too much. It's really good. Lots of twists and turns.
Mm.
I didn't even really realize who the cast is. So I would recommend not even looking up the cast ahead of time. Because there are some nice little moments that you'll be like, oh, you're in this? Oh, you're in this?
That's
so
nice.
That'll be fun. But it's really intense and unsettling. And I can't wait for people to see it so that I can talk to more people about it.
It really came out of nowhere. Like I didn't see a trailer. I heard nothing about it. And then all of a sudden it was in theaters and everybody was like, this is a hit.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like more and more that's happening to me with movies where I feel like I'm not. I don't know. It feels like some are
just like
out of
not
nowhere.
Clued in.
I don't know. I really felt like Barbarian came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
But on the opposite end, my other recommendation that is like a half recommendation because we started it and I was so into it is the new Armie Hammer documentary. It's called The House of Hammer.
No.
Yes.
See, that's confusing because I would think that was about Hammer horror movies.
Right?
But okay, that's fine. It's fine.
I know. It's on Discovery Plus, so you'll have to do a free trial and watch it within 7 days.
Is it worth it?
So the start of it is really good because it's much more focused on like the women that he sent crazy messages to.
Yes.
But it's about his like entire family and how it kind of like trickled down because he's from like a, you know, fancy
like a Hollywood family.
Yeah. I actually don't know if it's like, I guess it is kind of Hollywood. It's sort of just like
big money.
Big money family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So there's like a lot of abuse that like, you know, abused person, abuses person, abused person, abuses person, kind of trickle down.
Right. Absolutely.
Not making an excuse for him, but it's just interesting how far back all of the craziness kind of goes in his family.
Okay, well, you sold me because I've been I'm definitely interested in it because obviously I've only seen the headlines of the Armie Hammer stuff. And so I would be curious to, just to hear a deeper dive about all of it.
And it is one of those things too where I'm like, he put this all in writing. Like people like that, I'm like, you are insane.
Yeah.
You just feel untouchable.
Yeah, it's the privilege, it's the entitlement. Nothing can touch you. Nothing can hurt you because you have money.
Exactly.
So yeah, interesting. For recommendations for me, I feel like I have nothing because I've been just starting my new job, but I did finish the newest season of MasterChef, which was just wonderful. Really enjoyable. Big surprise on who won, but I'm very happy for them. And then I have also as my like, and I've said this probably before, but like the show that I watch over breakfast and sometimes like in the evening, I've been watching early seasons of Law and Order SVU. Why? I don't know. I love it. But I like them. I don't know. For some reason for me, it's kind of like, I know it's like all the most horrible things that could happen to someone, but for some reason it's just like calming background noise for me to like exist in. So I don't know why that is. But I don't want to dive too deep into that right now.
I love that. I mean, you know, whatever is calming to you, you got to use it.
Yeah. But that's it for me. I'll try to think of some more for the next time I try to actually watch some other movies.
I love it. Amazing. Well, I'm going to do a recent news story this week. I know. I'm going to tie it into like some further history going back. But basically, on September 2nd this year, the remains of what we think could be a female vampire were found in a village in Poland. So, you know, it's going to be closer to, you know, Salem witch trial kind of thing, where probably not a vampire, but someone that they believed to be a vampire at that time. So it was discovered during, you know, archaeological work at this 17th century cemetery in the village of Pien in Poland. I do just have to shout out, because I know so many of them listen, the family that always listens is my Polish side. So this is a real treat for them, I hope.
This is for you.
This is for all of the Kowal Czechs, shortened to Kowals. So this skeleton that they found had a sickle across her throat, seemingly, you know, preventing her from returning from the dead or sitting up. She also had a toe that was padlocked. So these tactics were, you know, supposed to keep them dead and staying dead. And the researchers also found a silk cap on her head that had silver and gold thread. So definitely, you know, shows that she's from a higher social status, which I think is interesting as far as, like, you know, if we're using kind of the same, like, most likely it was an outsider or, and I'll get into this a little bit more later, but like the fact that she was a higher social status, I think is interesting that they thought she was a vampire.
Yeah. Wait, I'm sorry. But, can I ask a stupid question? I don't know. I just misheard you. Did you say a toe padlock?
Yes. Her toe was padlocked.
Why? Is that a thing?
To keep her from standing up?
Oh my God.
I guess.
I've never heard of that. That's just fascinating.
I wonder, there's got to be a picture that we can put on the Instagram.
I hope so. I've never heard of that. That's wild. Yeah. Sorry, keep going. I just had to, I mean, that's just, I've never heard that.
A padlocked toe. I mean, that feels like it would also really hurt if it was.
Yeah, oh my God, terrible. That sounds like something out of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark or something.
Yes, yes. There's definitely, isn't there a lost toe story?
Yeah, the big toe thing.
Big toe. Yeah. I love it. I will say, though, you'll see on her skeleton very clearly as well. I did not know how clear until I looked at the picture, but she did have a very significant protruding tooth in the front. Oh. Yes.
Just
so
one.
So maybe, yes. Not two fangs, just one big tooth. So perhaps that is why they thought she was.
Why am I laughing? I mean, I haven't seen the picture, so to me this now sounds like a Looney Tune.
But padlock toe, big tooth.
That's so funny.
Okay. So it is kind of funny when you see the picture. So I think that's the right reaction.
Okay.
I mean, I feel terrible for her. I also feel confused about teeth now. I'm like, that a 17th century skeleton was buried and still has full set of teeth is kind of shocking.
Wow. Yeah. Right? Well, teeth is bone, right?
Yeah. But still.
I don't know.
The rest of her skeleton's like a little decayed. I'm like, man, she brushed those teeth at least.
Really? That one big tooth.
Okay. Back to business. So the team leader of this dig was Professor, I'm going to butcher this name, Professor Darius Polinsky from Nicholas Copernicus University. And he said that this form of burial was very rare and unusual. And so they're planning to continue this archaeological work and research at this cemetery. They're also going to do DNA testing on the remains to see if they can kind of learn more about this dead woman, which is very exciting. So I'll try to keep you guys posted on those developments as well. I will say this isn't the first discovery of remains like this. I mean, obviously, as I said, there was this kind of vampire epidemic that took place throughout Poland in the 17th century. And so there were other archaeological kind of findings, I guess. I don't know if that's how you say that. But in 2014, there was a group from the University of South Alabama who found six very similar vampire skeletons, very much like this. And this was in a slightly different village of Poland. It was about 130 miles from where this female vampire was found in Pien. So all of these vampire skeletons also had either sickles placed across their neck or body, or they had large rocks stacked under their chin, which also seems kind of crazy. Like they ran out of sickles and then they just had to put these big rocks on them.
Just to also hold
not
them
a
down.
Great way to go. Yeah.
No. Oh yeah, that is like a thing. I remember it's like not being stoned, but stones just being laid on you. I know it's like a torture inquisition, et cetera, et cetera thing. I don't know.
Sad. I know. Yeah, really horrifying. Just awful. But in that cemetery where they found those six skeletons, all of the other bodies were perfectly normal. So their kind of like initial thought back then was that the people could have been from outside, you know, outside the region. Like maybe they were foreigners who came to town and they thought, you know, they were or assumed they were vampires because they were different. But those researchers in 2014 extracted the tooth enamel of these skeletons to see like what their diet was. And turns out they were likely from the same area. So not outsiders.
I thought you were going to say, and turns out their diet was blood.
Turns out they drank blood. I wish it was like, actually, I don't know. Maybe I don't wish that vampires were real, but.
Yeah, I hear that.
But they do kind of like as more bodies were being found or as this was like kind of being thought about, they do think that possibly these victims could have been suffering from cholera. Which
classic.
Yeah, vampire. Exactly. Basically just a disease that spread in the 17th century that people didn't really know what it was. And so, you know, it could kill you pretty quickly. It's basically just drinking contaminated water. But without treatment, it could, you know, happen. I think I read it was like within 7 days you could die. So, I mean, just like Samara. But
wow.
But it's very fast.
Yeah.
So it's like you just drank water and then dropped dead. So obviously people were like not knowing the science behind any of it. We're just trying to, you know, explain why this could have happened. And so vampires were, you know, used in that way or thought of in that way.
Yeah.
So, you know, back then, I will say that vampires were considered very real, and even scientists and doctors thought of it as a medical disorder. So there's a lot of books that were written like back in the 1670s. There were all of these Latin books about grave eating where the undead were dug up to find that they had either been eating their own shrouds, which was just like death clothes, or that they had been feasting on their own limbs and bowels, which disgusting.
That's horrible.
So I don't know if that's, you know, I have a feeling that's probably like mental illness leading to being buried alive, leading to, you know, all of these things. But there hasn't been like a ton of findings there. There are also sightings of vampires that were reported in journals in Poland and Russia in the 1690s. And they're pretty intense. They basically talk about these creatures that sucked the blood out of humans and animals, and then engorged, blood would flow from their eyeballs, pores, and other orifices, which I feel like we don't see a ton in like our movie content of vampires, where like once they're full of blood, like bleeding from their eyes seems so scary.
Yeah, oh my God, so scary. It's a great image, but it's
right?
horrifying.
I know. I'm like, I can't believe they haven't done that more. But, you know, once dug up, their coffins were said to have been swimming in gore. And then even as a protection against these creatures, this is really gross, local people advised making bread from this very blood to protect themselves from contracting vampirism.
No, don't do it.
So I'm like, basically they were becoming vampires by thinking that they were real.
And protecting them. It's like trying to protect themselves. They decided to drink blood.
Yes.
No, but worse, just bake it into bread. Ew.
Bake it into bread. Blood.
Wait,
bread?
That's amazing. This is incredible.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
So I don't have too much more facts after that. I did think it was interesting. They said, you know, sometimes corpses were burned, smashed with stones, placed face down to bite into the ground, which I also thought was weird.
Yeah.
Like they made them like, I guess just buried them face down so that they couldn't like bite their way out. or had their heads and legs cut off, which is also just brutal. But corpses have been found with metal rods or stakes hammered through their skulls to ensure that they stayed dead. But honestly, reading about all of it, and, you know, you should do your own research. There's a lot of, like, vampire history. And I was a little sad because there's not a ton specific to Poland. So it was like, once I was like, okay, there's not a lot of Poland research, I didn't want to go too far into, like, the history of vampires. But it does feel very much like the witch trials and kind of, you know, these people that were either kind of social pariahs or sick with disease and people couldn't really explain it. And so they're, you know, were just assumed to be this, like, terrifying creature, even though it really wasn't, you know, it wasn't that situation. They were just either, and also, like, mental illness, I have a feeling, was a big part. And people being buried alive obviously was, like, a huge issue. Because they didn't have the science to, like, truly determine if someone was dead, I feel like. So all of that kind of lumping together to making these, you know, what they thought to be vampires, which, but probably weren't. But I think it's super interesting that they're still discovering these skeletons that were buried in all these crazy ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very interesting. And now we know about toe padlocks, so.
Yeah. I was getting ready to say, this is one of my favorite stories you've done because all the imagery was so good. You had the big front tooth, the toe padlock, the blood bread, the face down eating the dirt. I mean, you really had it all.
It's really a marketing, you know, got some buzzwords in there.
Seriously. But that was good. And we've actually had a request, I know, from one of our listeners named Martin, who wanted us to do, like, a deeper dive on, like, Nordic or, like, European vampires. And so I feel like you kind of just gave some of that. That was pretty cool.
A little bit. I know. There's a lot out there. Yeah. So I feel like it's different from region to region. And, like, you know, people talk about tuberculosis being another thing that was, like, a big, you know, big people thinking it was vampires. So there's a lot more out there. And we can definitely, you know, keep covering other versions of this or more, too.
For sure. For sure. All right. Shall I dive in?
Dive in. I'm ready.
Today's topic was inspired by a musical. Da, 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 da.
I love it.
Phantom of the Opera. So here we go. I literally just randomly Googled, is there a true story behind Phantom of the Opera? Because I was curious.
Yeah, I'm very curious.
Yeah. So let's do overview first. So Phantom of the Opera, the main way that you probably know it is either the film or the musical. So the musical is from the 80s, 1986, music by Andrew Lloyd Webber, lyrics by Charles Hart, and libretto by Webber and Richard Stilgo. And it is based on a novel of the same name. It's a French novel from 1910 by Gaston Leroux, and we'll talk a little bit about him in a minute. But so the musical and the movie and the book basically all follow a masked phantom that is living in a labyrinth beneath the Paris Opera House, and he becomes obsessed and in love with a beautiful soprano named Christine.
Just amazing.
It's just beautiful. It's just beautiful. Who played her in the movie? It's the Disney.
Yes, Emmy Rossum.
Yes, yes. And then I think the original Broadway cast was Sarah Brightman.
Yes, your fave.
My fave, also from Repo, the Genetic Opera. So, I mean, there's a lot of connections here. So I am going to go into some of the true story for Phantom of the Opera, but now I feel like there's a lot about this topic that I got very excited about. So in addition to the musical that I am a fan of, Gaston Leroux, I actually did some research on him a few months ago when I was looking into horror theater, and he was a big patron and fan of the Grand Guignol Theater in Paris. And I don't think I've done an episode on that, but I think I will either next week or the week after, because it's just amazing. It's like very early special effects techniques, live horror on stage. It's just awesome. But he was a fan of that and was inspired by that and some of the events I'm about to talk about to write Phantom of the Opera in 1910, which, by the way, wasn't actually very successful as a book. But then it got turned into the 1925 film starring Lon Chaney. And then it was very popular. And then, of course, the 80s musical. And now it's, you know, just part of our hearts. I don't know. So what parts of Phantom of the Opera actually have a little bit of truth to them? So the Paris Opera House is called the Palais Garnier. And it is just as stunning as you would imagine a gorgeous Paris Opera House to be. It's a huge, huge staple in France. And it was built to house the Paris Opera for Napoleon III. It's extremely ornate. All the art in there, it's beautiful. And just like the book, movie, and musical, there was a tragedy there involving a chandelier. Dun, dun, dun. So if you don't know, in the musical The Phantom of the Opera, there is a part where the chandelier kind of not fully falls, but kind of drops down a little bit from the ceiling in a big scare tactic way to distract us from the phantom kidnapping Christine.
It's so good.
It's immersive theater in the 80s. It's very exciting.
It really is.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so this actually did happen. So in, let's see, 1896. So the actual chandelier in the opera house didn't fall. But so on May 20th, 1896, there was an incident at the opera house where not the chandelier, that the whole chandelier didn't fall, but the counterweights fell out of the ceiling and crashed down onto a spectator, killed them, and injured a bunch of other people.
My God. Killed someone?
It did. It killed somebody. It's very bad. It's very bad. And this happened during a performance of an opera that is since mostly forgotten, but it's called Hell. But it's H-E-L-L-E. Oh. So I'm not sure what that translates to. Let me see if I can look it up for you really quickly. Helly. Oh, it's Grace. Oh, sorry. It's actually based on the Greek myth of Ellie, which I don't know that either. But I was hoping it was an opera about hell.
Me too. And then they sent that person straight there.
That was kind of what I was hoping for. But unfortunately for us, it's not really true.
Alas.
But yeah, so the chandelier and the bronze reflector, and I'll post a picture behind it, were supported on the ceiling by a bunch of counterweights, like slightly above the ceiling, and somehow something broke and boom, right in the middle of performance, came down, killed one person who, and this was very sad. So the woman's name was Madame Chaumette, and they didn't even realize that she was dead because it hit her and everyone fled. And then a girl said, "Hey, my mom is missing. I can't find my mom." And then they go back in and they found her body underneath this thing. And she was dead when they got there.
That is horrifying.
It is horrifying. I'm sure there was like a lot of chaos when it happened, of people just running out. And like, you know, I'm sure it was very, very chaotic. And I think it also did like start like a small fire, like it didn't burn down the place or anything. But I'm sure there was a lot of chaos. But still, like, dang, it's so sad.
It's terrible. It's really dark.
Yeah. So that's the first part. So that's like the big, you know, imagery of Phantom of the Opera, the giant chandelier falling. But also underneath the Paris Opera House are some things that are included in Phantom of the Opera. So there actually is a lake of sorts underneath the opera house. So this is very strange.
Whoa.
So there is a water tank down there that was built because when they were digging out to build the opera house, there was all this groundwater that they couldn't get rid of. So they were trying to get rid of it so they could lay down the structure. And for some reason, all this water kept flooding in. So what they decided to do, instead of trying to fight it more, is actually build like a well system that could take in the water.
This literally is Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah. That's so crazy. I'll post pictures of this as well. But so there is this actual lake underneath that is, and in addition to the lake, there are tunnels built underneath the Paris Opera House, just like in the book and the musical. And it looks, I mean, it's not as, there's not as much fog, I guess.
Or it's singing.
It's not as romantic. Yeah, there's not as many high E's.
Candles.
Yes. But it still is like very spooky looking. But one weird thing about this lake is so they actually use it. So first of all, apparently there is a, I don't know, this is just in some articles, that there is one catfish that lives in the lake.
Oh, okay.
That people feed a catfish. I don't know why. I don't know why they would not take that thing out. But also, firefighters use this lake to practice swimming in their gear for like drills, which I thought was very strange, but kind of nice.
You watch there.
I don't know.
Nowhere else. No pools available.
There's no pools in Paris. There's only the lake under the Paris Opera House. Why? I don't know.
The question is if there's that creepy Christine doll. Does she live down there?
You know, I haven't found that, but just for the sake of this conversation, yes, it's down
there. She does.
Yeah, so, and then, in addition, so the main character of Phantom of the Opera is Eric, who is a disfigured man. It described as, in the book, it's described as being almost like a skeleton, like having no nose, very tight yellow skin against the bone where it almost looks like a skeleton. And the Lon Chaney Phantom of the Opera image is kind of the closest to what the book has.
Yeah, he looks real similar to that.
Yes, exactly like that. And then the musical, we have a more romanticized version of it. So we can have this kind of like romantic story between, or this romantic triangle really of the Phantom, Christine, and Raoul. And the Phantom like has a little bit of sex appeal to him. Mm-hmm. So it's just like half of his face is actually like burned, I think, in the musical it is. Is that right?
I think so too.
Something like that.
Yeah, he's like afraid of fire, right?
Yeah, he's afraid of fire, exactly.
I don't know though. There's that whole like flashback to him being like a little like kid in the circus or the sideshow.
Oh,
I can't remember.
Yeah. So I think, and I'm honestly not sure how much of this is the book versus movie versus musical versus whatever. But yeah, I think the story of Eric is that he was so deformed that his parents abandoned him at age 8 and a traveling circus picked him up. He was with them for some years and then he escaped to somewhere in Prussia and then learned how to be an architect. And then from there, eventually found himself in the Paris Opera House. Is there more? I can't remember. That's mostly the backstory.
Honestly, how little we have accomplished when that man had everything against him. And he really,
what have I
done? Really is living large. I know.
Why haven't I joined the circus yet?
You should.
I should. Honestly, I would be down. Okay. So the last thing I'll say about this is that there were some random bodies unearthed. So the story about Eric the Phantom isn't really necessarily true. Sure, they tell the story because of the book and stuff, and people say like, oh, maybe we saw the Phantom while we were at the Opera House. There's not really a great story that goes along with that. But so let's see. In 1907, they were trying to bury a time capsule with 24 phonographic recordings of opera singers of the time, burying it in a cellar in the opera house. And then, so Gaston Leroux, the writer of Phantom of the Opera, he says that the body of a disfigured architect named Eric was found during that process. That's not true. But what is true is that they did find random bodies there. And this, I mean, Paris is really old, so I feel like this happens a lot more in Europe, where just bodies are buried under cities. And we had that in New York too, and we're not even that old of a country. So I don't think it's so crazy, but they were finding random bodies as they were trying to bury this time capsule.
Oh my God.
So yeah, I mean, that's really it. I wanted the story of the actual Phantom himself to be true, but that doesn't seem to be the case. Beck Gaston LaRoe did pull a lot of inspiration from the actual Paris Opera House, and I think he was greatly inspired by the Grand Guignol Horror Theater that was happening in Paris at the time. And so I'll try to cover that another week, because it's very interesting.
And that's it.
And I just have one question for you, Lauren. Are you a fan of Phantom of the Opera, the musical?
I am. I really am. I think I'm like, I feel like I was really into the movie because it hit like right when we were like in middle school or something, or elementary school.
I don't know if I've actually seen the movie, which I know is sad.
Really? Oh, you should see it. It's actually a pretty good movie musical.
Yeah, I'll watch it.
Patrick Wilson and Emmy Rossum and Gerard Butler. I mean, it's a great cast.
Yeah.
But it's, I remember like I feel like people who loved the musical were like not super sold on the movie, but I didn't really have a reference for the musical. So I liked it a lot. I don't know.
Yeah. All right.
I liked the music. Do you like it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I saw the first time I actually saw it was I saw a high school production of it, which is hilarious.
Oh my God. But how'd they even do it?
I don't know. Probably poorly. Legally. I thought it was good. And then I saw the Broadway one. And yeah, I don't know. I like it.
It's creepy. It's romantic.
That's what I think I like. It feels so like old Broadway drama. Like dramatic. I don't know. It's fun.
Big costumes, the whole thing.
Yeah. But thank you all so much for listening. I appreciate you, and we hope you have some sweet, sweet nightmares.
Bye.